It's Hoffman Show, hour number two here on the Team 980, an hour that will feature your comments. Never read the comments. Coming up at 5:30. And then coming up at 6 o'clock, top storylines of the day from Command Land. You'll hear from Joe Witt Jr. and Cliff Kingsbury. Right now, though, it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Joining us today, Andrew Filippone. First and Pod is his national podcast. So he definitely has an eye on the Commanders always, because he has an eye on every team. They do every team, every game, every week. But his day job, if you will, is to host Afternoon Drive in Pittsburgh on 93.7 The Fan, our great Odyssey station there. Pony, appreciate your time, man. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Craig, did not anticipate when the schedule came out that this was going to be a marquee game, but here we are, 6-2, 7-2, both coaches in the Coach of the Year conversation for sure. So that's another subplot to this game. And Mike Tomlin's incredible record against rookie quarterbacks on the line here as well on Sunday.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels certainly no ordinary rookie, so we'll see how that goes. We'll get into all aspects of this game, but I'm just curious, as someone who does watch every single team, every game, every weekend, when did you shift from like, oh, the Commanders are a nice story, this is fun, to like, oh, this is a real serious good football team?
So it definitely took a few weeks when they beat the Giants, but the kicker got hurt for New York at the beginning of the game, and they only settled for field goals and won. I still probably was pretty skeptical about their long-term chances. And I'm trying to think of the game that would have made me say, you know what, I've got to just throw caution to the wind here and say that this guy's in the Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin, Ben Roethlisberger, CJ Stroud, Dan Marino group of quarterbacks. And that was probably like around week four, week five. I mean, when the dude's completing 80% of his passes and you watch the games and they're not just straight dink and dunk plays. You know, I'll tell you actually the moment. There was that play, and you can remember the game, where he came to the sideline with Kingsbury and he's like, let me throw it deep here.
The Cincinnati game on Monday night where he hit McLaurin.
There it is. The Cincinnati Monday night game. And even though the Bengals have lost a lot of games at home, it still went in a shootout against Joe Burrow. So I think that's probably where it clicked for me, Craig.
For the Pittsburgh side of things this year, this is just another Mike Tomlin. They find ways to win. They're physical. Is there anything special, though, you think about this team that has allowed them to get out to the record? Because they're not floating around 500. Like, this team is winning more consistently as opposed to floating around. It's like, oh, well, Tomlin saved the streak at the end of the year. Like, they're almost already there. So how have they been able to win more consistently this year? Is there anything special to you about this team?
It's not a smoke and mirrors team anymore, okay? It's not a team that you look at them at the end of the year and they got outscored and they still found a way to go to 9-8. Or they had a ridiculous record in one score games. It's not that. And that's been the Steelers the last few seasons. That's why they've made the playoffs and they've been dead man walking in the postseason, because they were an average football team at best. Now they're way more than that. I thought Justin Fields gave them better quarterback play than they got most of the last couple of years because of his running dimension, but it's actually been elevated to an even higher level since Russell Wilson's gone in. He's been outstanding. They've averaged over 30 points a game with him in there. I didn't have a closed-minded outlook on him. Like, he was completely cooked from Denver in his last year in Seattle. So I was cautiously optimistic, I guess is what I would say. But he's exceeded my expectations, especially when he missed so much of camp in the preseason and then the first 6 weeks of the season with a calf strain. I didn't think we'd see this kind of Russell Wilson through the first two games. And they're top 15 scoring, they're second in scoring defense. So they're really a complete team right now, Craig. There's not a lot of holes with the Steelers, and they're not a phony 6-2 or paper champion team. They're a legit football team this year.
When you talk about the move from Fields to Russ, obviously the running game becomes a little less efficient because Fields is so dangerous, but also these 50-50 balls that Russ has been throwing forever that maybe aren't exactly 50-50 when he throws them. How has that kind of changed the dynamic of their offense, the deep ball specifically, and what Wilson has brought to it?
So we saw it actually last year when Mason Rudolph replaced Trubisky. And he actually throws a great long ball too. It's not on par with Russell Wilson, who's probably, you know, a top 10 in NFL history at that. But we saw when he went in for Trubisky late in the year, it did unlock or untap something in their offense. They scored more than 30 points against the Bengals. They had a huge game in Seattle that helped them get to the playoffs. They had back-to-back 400 yards of total offense games. And it was because safeties had to play deeper, respecting the ability of the quarterback to get the ball downfield. I think the same thing has happened here, actually, with Russell Wilson. Najee Harris was already finding his footing. I think he was adjusting to the Arthur Smith scheme, way different than what they had with the incompetent Matt Canada. And so I think that it's become a team now that you can't just look at the Steelers and figure if we stop the run, we've got them beat. Because Russ is the home run hitter that he is, and Pickens is the perfect quarterback for that. And now you throw Mike Williams in to that mix as well. So I think that's probably what he's done, is that he's allowed for teams to honor the Steelers' downfield passing game. And they've run the ball more. The only team that's run the ball more than them in the league this year is Baltimore. And they've become a much more efficient running team in the last few games. Najee Harris is coming into this game with three straight 100-yard rushing games, Craig. That's never happened in his career as a first-round pick until right now.
Andrew Filippone, Afternoons 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh with us here on the Hoffman Show for today's Not My Beat. I'm glad you mentioned Harris and how well he's playing, because the overall season numbers are not as good as you would think based off reputation for Pittsburgh. I think they're like middle of the pack in EPA per rush. I think they're 19th in success rate. And when I looked at that stuff up this morning, I expected those numbers to be higher. Why has it still worked for them? Like, how have they been able to put forth an offense that scores points? And how have those numbers maybe gotten better the last 3 weeks, or why have they gotten better the last 3 weeks?
Well, I think the offense had to not only adjust to a new play caller in a radically different scheme, but they also had a different offensive line combination in every game. So they lost Isaac Seumalo right before the season started. He came over from Philly. He's probably their most consistent offensive lineman. If I were to power rank their offensive lineman coming into the season, I would have had him number one based on preseason expectations. James Daniels, their right guard, if you go by basically any, whether it's a Pro Football Focus grade or even run block win rate, things like that, he was one of the best guards in football before he was lost for the season in a contract year. So they had to replace two guards. Now Seumalo's back. Daniels is out for the year. And Mason McCormick, a guy they picked in the fourth round, has slid in there. He's been up and down. You'd expect that from a day three rookie being forced to play. Broderick Jones, their right tackle, who's really a left tackle, has been one of the worst offensive tackles in the entire NFL. So I guess what I'm saying is that they've had to deal with and try to game plan around not having above average run blocking, or just blocking period. I think that hurt Najee. He's a guy that honestly needs a hole. He's not someone that is, even at his size is going to run somebody over and create one, which is unfortunate. And he doesn't have the breakaway speed. There's not a lot of like long runs, even when he gets to the second level with a hole. So I think that's probably why the numbers were down at the beginning of the year. And they've ticked up, because I think this young offensive line has gotten more comfortable playing together. And they're going to get Zach Frazier back for this game on Sunday. And that's massive. Their center, he was a second round pick from West Virginia. He is outstanding. He's had a Creed Humphrey-like effect on this team as far as young, precocious offensive linemen go. I think he's already probably one of the 5 or 10 best centers in the entire NFL.
When you look at the Pittsburgh defense against Jaden Daniels in this very, very high-powered Washington offense, is there an area that particularly – we'll go with this one first. We'll make the Washington fans, my listeners, happy first. Is there an area that particularly scares you with Daniels and this offense against the Pittsburgh defense?
So their overall numbers against the run are great. If you just look at the stats, you'd think this is a real challenge for Washington, because the Commanders are so run-heavy. And the Steelers, that's their strength defensively. But they're coming off their worst game. Tyrone Tracy for the Giants killed them on Monday night 2 weeks ago. And if he doesn't get knocked out of that game with a concussion by Cam Hayward, I'm not entirely sure the Steelers win. I think they still do, but it would have been a much closer game at the very end there when Daniel Jones threw an interception to put the game away for the Steelers. So this has happened a couple times with them. Anthony Richardson, actually, at the start of that game against the Steelers when they lost and their offense really struggled in the first quarter, or their defense really struggled in the first quarter, he was moving the ball on him, and he was running the ball a lot as a dual threat guy, and they were having a hard time tackling Jonathan Taylor. So there's a couple of games that show chinks in the armor for them, and they usually take time to warm up to a game. They're one of the worst first quarter defenses in the entire NFL. Now, the flip side of that is they're the best second half defense. They haven't given up a point in the third quarter all year, actually. So that's a credit to the coaching staff and the adjustments they've made. But they did a horrible job tackling in space against the Giants on Sunday. And I'm sure Mike Tomlin dug into that during the bye week. That's been a point of emphasis all week. I know that. And we'll see if Washington can expose it again in this game, Craig.
Is there something then on the flip side that you feel pretty good about, whether it's Watt in the pass rush or anything else that you think, hey, Washington's gotten a lot of teams on this year, but I think Pittsburgh can handle it?
Well, I feel good about Joey Porter Jr. against Terry McLaurin. I think that's got to be, from the pass attack standpoint, like, you know, I thought the Steelers should have picked up Noah Brown when he was let go by Houston, because we've had an enormous void here at wide receiver too. And I thought he would have been a tremendous pickup. And, you know, with the Dotson trade, he's probably wide receiver two there in Washington right now with the injuries and stuff they've had, more so than McCaffrey. And like, I'm comfortable with the Steelers' depth corners in those matchups. It's McLaurin against Porter, and Porter will travel with him for sure. That's going to be the interesting thing here, is we've seen this guy go off now that he has competent quarterback play for the first time in his career. And I just wonder if he's able to be mitigated in this game, how effective Jaden Daniels is going to be when he has to go to his secondary targets like Zach Ertz and Noah Brown in the running backs in this game. So that's probably, from the Steelers' defensive way of looking at it, like, okay, even if our pass rush doesn't get home, we feel like we've got a legit number one corner who can handle this big assignment.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be really interesting. Then again, McLaurin last week had three catches for 19 yards, just that two of them were touchdowns. So it's the loudest three-catch, 19-yard game that you'll ever hear about in anyone's career. Last but not least, Andrew Filippone, 93.7 The Fan, with us from Pittsburgh. You mentioned Tomlin's record against rookie quarterbacks. Why have they been so successful, and do you think that can translate to Daniels, who is unlike any rookie we have ever seen through 10 games of this NFL, or 10 weeks of this NFL season?
So I want to say that early in his tenure, I give more of the credit to, they had a defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau, who is widely recognized as one of the greatest in NFL history.
Yeah,
and the godfather of the zone blitz scheme. And I just think that unique way of having a inside linebacker come through up the middle, dropping an outside linebacker in coverage, having three linebackers blitz, having a defensive end drop in coverage. I mean, they would just show very exotic things. And even though, you know, you'd see it on tape maybe, I think when you got into the games, it was just overwhelming for quarterbacks, and it was a lot for them. And that's why I think Tomlin was able to pad his record against rookie quarterbacks so early in his career. So I'll start there. And they can just get pressure with four consistently. And I think that's hard on teams when you can trust TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith and Cam Hayward to get there. You can designate a lot of guys to make sure that there's a double team and that guys are covered, and you're not leaving yourself vulnerable to plays where guys can get the ball out quick and there's an open receiver, because you're losing the numbers game. So that's probably the answer right now. And I will say, last year they did lose to CJ Stroud and they got boat raced in that game. So that would be hope for the Commanders here, is that this impeccable record, which is 25-6, the most wins against rookie quarterbacks ever by a head coach. At least last year, they lost to Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and they lost to C.J. Stroud. So lately, Tomlin hasn't been as perfect against these young quarterbacks.
Andrew Filipponi, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. You can listen to his show, of course, on the free Odyssey app and check out First and Pod Mondays and Fridays with Patrick Peterson, who, of course, joined us yesterday. It was great to have Pat P on. Pony, always great to chat, my friend. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
You bet, Craig. Thank you.
Hey, this is DA, and you're listening to The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Thanks again to Andrew Filipponi for joining us from 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. And, Ant, bring you in here because there's something that caught your eye, yeah, from that. Did you listen to that conversation in terms of the matchup this weekend that you thought was worth double-clicking on?
Yes, I did indeed. His comments on what Russ brings to this offense. I know there was a lot of conversation about the Steelers moving on from Justin Fields after
starting. We talked about it on this show.
Yeah, exactly. So, but now being able to like look at what Russ brings, and he was talking about, you know, the deep ball.
Just in case folks missed it, in case you're just tuning in, Andrew Filipponi, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, just joined us, one of the best sports talkers in the whole country. And this is what exactly actually the bite that Anthony's talking about.
I think that it's become a team now that you can't just look at the Steelers and figure if we stop the run, we've got them beat. Because Russ is the home run hitter that he is, and Pickens is the perfect quarterback for that. And now you throw Mike Williams in to that mix as well. So I think that's probably what he's done, is that he's allowed for teams to honor the Steelers' downfield passing game. And they've run the ball more. The only team that's run the ball more than them in the league this year is Baltimore. And they've become a much more efficient running team in the last few games. Najee Harris is coming into this game with three straight 100-yard rushing games, Craig. That's never happened in his career as a first-round pick until right now.
So that deep ball element, and the results don't lie, they've scored 30 in two of their last three. Like, it clearly is a big deal, and I think that's a huge deal if Lattimore's not playing, which it looks like he's not because he hasn't practiced yet since he got to D.C. And so now all of a sudden you're talking about Benjamin St. Juice playing these 50-50 balls with George Pickens, or a smaller Mike Sainer still playing these 50-50 balls with George Pickens, and I think you have to ask, are those actually 50-50?
It's a great question because, again, Pickens, we've seen the extraordinary catches that he's had. Like, his special catch on Madden is probably at a 99 just because of, you know, how good he is at tracking the ball. But, yeah, I think this is a chance for our corners to sort of kind of be susceptible to DPIs just because of how small Samer still is and how handsy Benjamin St. Juice can be. So that's something that I'll be watching. Necessarily, just because you have Mike Williams and you also have George Pickens, who are big receivers.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think you can't freak out if you give up one or two.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to take a ton of shots. That's how this offense operates. The thing is, they're so inefficient otherwise. Like, this is not, watching the tape of them is not what you think for an offense that's scoring 30. Like, what the Commanders look like down in, down out, what the Ravens look like, what the Bengals look like. Like, those are offenses where you're like, oh yeah, that's good. That's beautiful. That's good NFL offense. It's schemed up well. Guys are open. Quarterbacks making plays, the easy ones and the hard ones. No. Steelers are like, dang it, we're in 3rd and 10 again. Let's run a mesh concept. And then on the outside of that mesh concept, we're going to send Pickens deep. Sick. We got the coverage we want. Russ. Pew! Like, literally, the two deep balls that I watched on film from the Jets game against the Steelers, mm-hmm. They're both 3rd down and long. They run like a mesh concept, so receivers coming from either side, crossing in the middle of the field. And on one, they just ISO'd Pickens on the outside, and everyone else is focused on what's inside. It's one-on-one on the outside. Cool. Easy way to do it. No window dressing at all. The second one, it's like, oh, look, we put a sign in the window. It's just they ran him out of the slot, and it was a slightly different alignment, but it's the same exact play on the other side of the field. Now they can do that with Mike Williams Mike Evans was playing, Marshawn Lattimore would definitely be like, my hamstring's fine. I got someone to fight.
Yeah.
Mike Williams with the Steelers now. Like they've got more options to do that. And they've got some speed underneath. It's like that offense does nothing else. But also the rushing numbers are not as good as you would think. And that's what makes this also interesting. You know, Pony, you just heard, said Najee Harris, first time ever having three straight 100-yard games. They're like 19th in the NFL in success rate. And sometimes that's like, okay, our hit rate isn't very high, but it's kind of like a home run hitter in baseball. When they make contact, they're big. They don't generate a ton of explosive plays. Najee Harris is not a home run hitter. So It's kind of funky how they've been doing this. And I think part of it, too, though, is they just wear you down. And then defensively, they've also scored, and special teams, they've scored. So you have to be on alert in all three phases. But this offense is one that should not give the Commanders the types of problems that you would expect just based off the point totals that Pittsburgh's put up in recent weeks. But obviously, where Washington thrives is being in a positive game flow, getting up early. And unless they can continue their first quarter trend against a very good Pittsburgh defense, that's probably not going to happen. But the Steelers, as Pony said, they've actually been not great in the first quarter. They also haven't given them a point in the third quarter all year. So do your damage while you can, and then go on from there. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, there was a lot of YouTube comments this week. A big trade? Yeah, we had a lot to get to. Never Read the Comments is next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And that becomes particularly important about this time every week because we don't only just stream live on YouTube. We put all the segments up, or a lot of them, up on demand. And then people leave comments. And, well, we think it's our duty to engage with those folks who have taken the time to engage with our radio show, even if they're watching it as a YouTube video. The point is we do this.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, let's dive into it. You can watch the show on demand at Craig Hoffman on YouTube or at the Team 980. And we always start this segment with a little amuse-bouche, something to just get the palate going. And this was really funny, actually, Anthony. On last week's edition of Never Read the Comments, someone listened to all of the silly things that were said during that segment. And let's see. Let's get the screen name right here. Mo Musavi, 1533, says, "Hey, guys, let's just hit the like button when we are watching the show."
Wow.
That's really funny. No, leave comments. Leave comments, too. Some of y'all would sound smarter if you just hit the like button. But, you know, then this segment doesn't go anywhere. So that's not true. We put good comments in this one, too. I also, just a feel good to get us started here. And by the way, stay tuned for a whopper of a cool comment at the end. Like, one of the coolest things that's happened in my career was a comment that I got on a video that I'm going to share with you guys at the end of this segment. But Anthony Etheridge 415 commented on our chat with Clinton Yates last week about how the fan base and the younger fan base is really starting to emerge. And, you know, we all know what can happen generationally because of a guy like Jaden Daniels and what he has brought, the joy and the pride of like, yeah, I want to be a fan of the good team. And all of a sudden, the good team isn't just the one wearing purple, especially for Maryland kids who are in between DC and Baltimore, but the burgundy and gold too. And Anthony Etheridge, not Anthony Haney, said, "I'm a bus driver in PG County, and I can honestly say that I've never seen so many kids walking around with Commanders gear on. I think the future of the fan base is good." That's cool, man. Like, one, thanks for watching, Anthony. I hope you're watching at home, not while you're driving the bus. Maybe if you're waiting on some kids with eyes on the road, of course. But sharing that perspective, I thought was really cool, and I appreciated that.
Nah, it really is in full, like, effect.
Well, say you, for those that don't know, Anthony Haney, yes, works at Georgetown Prep, and you also work at a middle school.
Yes, my
So, like, how much more burgundy and gold are you seeing this year compared to previous years.
Oh, I'm seeing a ton. And I see kids come out to camp. I see every time I come into the building, kids are throwing up the left hand. They already know what I stand for. Left hand up, baby.
They played that. Oh, and they put Bobby Wagner on the Jumbotron at the Wizards game the other night. They obviously put Jaden up, and then everyone saw that. That was cool because they played the Hail Mary. And then Jaden. And Jaden got like a standing ovation. Did you not see that?
So I saw the standing ovation.
They played the Hail Mary on the Jumbotron that and then showed Jaden. And Jaden was like giving the princess wave, if you will. Yeah, the king. He's the king. And then they put Bobby up and like two timeouts or whatever later. And they were playing left hand up. So that was a good time. As for the team itself, what do you think dominated the comments this week? Thoughts on Marshawn Lattimore and the trade that hopefully we'll see Lattimore a week from tonight against the Eagles. Doesn't look like we're going to see him this weekend against the Steelers, but is it short term or is this long term? That was one of the things. And I got to say, I probably should have been a little more open-minded earlier in the week with how I talked about his contract. I had the facts of the case right, but the analysis is probably needed some massaging. This is what happens when things happen quickly. And you're doing live shows, you don't necessarily always say the exact right thing, but that's why I wanted to make sure that I cleared this up, not once and for all, because there's people that aren't going to see this and they'll still say that I said the wrong thing. And that's live radio, baby. But Beckler Boy One says Peters doesn't see him as a rental. He sees him as a game changer who will be paid market value for the next 2 years. Here's the thing. Marshawn's contract is not going to stay the way it is right now because the Commanders could move on after the year because there is no guaranteed money, which is why Lattimore is not going to want that. He doesn't want to be playing on consecutive, essentially, team options. His agent's going to be like, can we get some guarantees here? And that can also be converted into bonus money, and the cash flow of that is different on the player side of it. And it's actually beneficial to both sides because if they agree to a deal that has some level of guaranteed money, at least for next year, so that like if something were to happen to him in training camp, they can't just be like, well, never mind, depending on when that money might become guaranteed. But I think it's not guaranteed at all. It's not like becomes guaranteed on the third day of the league year. Like he gets a roster bonus, but it is truly a non-guaranteed deal at this point because the Saints already restructured it once. So what they would do then is move some of that to bonus money. That is obviously, hey, signing bonus, restructure bonus, whatever you want to word it. You get that money immediately. Good cash flow. That's guaranteed. We're going to guarantee X amount of this year and maybe even X amount of the year after. And we're going to add a year to the contract as well that is not guaranteed. Then now we're dealing with a 2 or 3 year deal instead of a 2 year deal that spreads out some of the cap hits. And by the way, even if it brings some of the base numbers down or pushes a higher non-guaranteed base into year three, however they do it, they can manipulate the cap to bring the cap number down, get some guaranteed money that Lattimore doesn't currently have, even if it were to technically bring the ceiling or not change the ceiling of what is on his current deal. And because the Commanders are in control, because Lattimore has no guaranteed money here, and it's not like he can say, well, if I don't like it, I'll walk. Okay, well, we'll just keep you at your current number and no guaranteed money. And that's pretty good in terms of the market value for us because he's going to be making below top corner money, which is what they hope to get in terms of it play out of him. So that's kind of where the contract is. I know that's a little wishy-washy, but it's because it's going to depend on what happens here. But it is something that the Commanders control. He's not a rental, pure rental. He could be, but unlikely. And it is going to be something that they address probably in the offseason, relatively early, like January, probably February combine is when a lot of that stuff gets done. As for the deal itself, JDC Cartier PV4RR. Look, I said it. Some of y'all got to get more concise screen names. Why do you need all those letters? Just JDC Cartier. Cool. Cartier. It's sleek. That's the point. I'll be honest for a sec. This was probably one of the fairest trades I've seen in a while in which both teams won. I think that goes a long way for future trades with other teams knowing we aren't trying to fleece, but the Eagles-Dotson trade was on them. Yeah, look, at the time, the Eagles were getting a guy who was a first-round pick 2 years ago who still has 2 years remaining on his rookie contract. That is a very valuable piece in theory. It's kind of why I'm surprised Emmanuel Forbes didn't get traded. He's got 3 years left on his rookie deal, plus a potential fifth-year option, as Dotson has as well. And he was drafted in the first round last year. You're telling me no one would give up anything? So I'm kind of curious what the plan is for Forbes. But I think that with Lattimore, like, you're getting a really good player with multiple years of team control left if you want it, and that's worth something. And I always think that NFL teams, it's really hard, or NFL trades, it's really hard to kind of understand the value. Like, it is, like, good luck figuring out the trade charts. Because, Anthony, it feels like sometimes you got dudes who are, like, all pros getting traded for sixth-rounders, and then dudes who are like, yeah, he's good, second-round pick in return. But most of it does come down to the contracts. And that's what makes the, you know, why I spent so much time on the Lattimore contract, because it's a pretty interesting one to try to judge the value of.
Yeah, I was just about to say, the Cowboys got so much slack for giving up a 4-4, a guy not a lot of people know, when, you know, there's D-Hop out there, Amari Cooper, all these other, you know, notable and productive wide receivers.
But they need cheap talent.
Yep, they do.
And I'm not saying that it was a good deal, because Jonathan Mingo might not be the talent part, but he certainly is cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, is like, if you're going to do it, like, Dotson at least has shown an ability to produce in the NFL. At least that's what we thought. Obviously, it hasn't worked out very well for the Eagles this year. We'll get there later on in this Never Read the Comments, because there was also a lot of comments on Shane's call. So we'll get to that. But with Jonathan Mingo, I mean, unless their scouting department loved him coming out, I don't really get that one. That's probably an overpay. At least make it conditional. Up to if dude catches 50 balls the rest of the year, sure. But they need cheap talent, because they paid Dak a bunch of money. They paid CD a bunch of money. They got to pay Micah a bunch of money. And this is what you have to do. You have to go bargain bin shopping. But for the Commanders, it's the opposite. Like, they can go luxury shopping because they have all this cap space. They had some extra draft picks. And obviously, we heard from Adam Peters on that yesterday. More on the Lattimore trade. And speaking of Emmanuel Forbes, actually, Big Pimpin 237 says, I always appreciate your thoughts on the happenings of this team. Thank you. Though I noticed you didn't mention Forbes in the group of cornerbacks that can possibly be mentored by Marshawn Lattimore. Is that because you are in agreement with a large portion of the fan base that he should be moved on from, or is it something else entirely? No, Big Pimpin 237, a sentence or a preamble or a sentence part that I never thought I'd say in my whole ass life. I am in agreement with most of the fan base. I am out on Emmanuel Forbes. I have seen enough. I think part of that is because I feel like they have seen enough, and I'm somewhat stunned that he is still on the football team. I thought there was a really good chance that he got cut to make room for Lattimore, and said they cut F.A. Obata. What's the point? Is he just going to be inactive? Because if he's not, he's not playing a ton of teams for you. He's not physical. It's not working. And so unless they think in the offseason they can do a mega reset on him and give him one more shot, and then if it doesn't work out, they'll trade him like they did Dotson. I don't know, because maybe they've liked some of what he's done. I know they've liked some of what he's done. But then he gets out there again coming off the injury, and he plays six snaps a couple weeks ago because he has a terrible run fit where he just does not. I don't want to say he doesn't try hard enough, but he doesn't try correctly. I'm going to put it that way, out of respect for the fact that he's an NFL player and it's a really hard game to play. But he does not play with the play style that is reminiscent of the rest of his teammates. And that is a problem. And if he's not going to do it, then what is the point? And so maybe a guy like Marshawn Lattimore, former first-round pick, can reach him in a way that nobody else has. That would be cool, because he's super talented. His ball skills are great. He obviously had the pick. They don't have a ton of those this year. He's got one of them, and it showed on that play. Like, he just had a really high-level understanding of what was supposed to happen. He ran the route for the receiver. Like, it was beautiful. We need that. And if that can happen, it's worth putting out there, but not at the expense of being a weak point in every other area of the game for an interception every 5 weeks. As for more, a lot of more reaction before we get to Shane from Moxon Hill, Charles Davis joined us on the breaking news of the Lattimore trade. And that was a delight for 1980C Money. You said great clip of the short that we made out of that. And the entire interview was great. I am surprised at how well he knows the DBs. St. Juice will be fine, number three, number four, with the larger possession receivers. He should never have been on Flowers. First of all, Charles Davis, OG, he's fantastic. Love for Charles. Glad, wanted to make sure that we shouted out the Charles Davis compliment because Charles deserves it. Second of all, I do think there's a specific body type and type of player that St. Juice is significantly better on. And it is, I'm going to call it the Marvin Harrison Jr., right? Rookie, good speed, good size, not the most polished route runner. And the reason I think that's really important, one, because like a guy like Mike Williams certainly can fit into that. I think George Pickens to an extent fits into that, although he's got great speed. The burner speed is what I think worries me about the St. Juice Pickens matchup potentially this weekend. But I saw Mark Bullock point this out on a technique thing, and I'll give credit to Bullock, who, of course, used to work for The Post and The Athletic and does a great Substack if you want the nitty-gritty details of the X's and O's. But he said that St. Juice typically reads things really well, but he takes too many steps as he chops and breaks on these comebacks, which is why he's always one step late. And he's swiping at the ball, but it's already been caught, and it's, hey, good job on the rally and tackle, the identification. You didn't give up the deep ball, but how do you get there quicker and make an actual play on the football or maybe even jump some of those and get picks? And for the most precise of route runners, that's hard because they take fewer steps. Their ability to suddenly stop where St. Juice has got to be like, I am breaking. Now I'm going back the other way, recelerating. Like, that's a tough gig. Against a receiver like, say, Mike Williams, who does not have that acceleration, that quickness, that burst, he's going to be more on St. Juice's speed plane. And so I think against those types of receivers, Benjamin can use his length, obviously, on the 50-50 type of stuff. And if it gets into a jump ball situation, but he's also not as susceptible to some of the curls and comebacks and things that he's given up this year to the Jamar Chases of the world. Zay Flowers obviously got him when he had to run horizontally with him across the field. This is a different caliber. And I think that's been interesting talking to Will Blackman a little bit this week about this, talking to Patrick Peterson. I mean, I kind of knew Anthony when I asked Pat P about this, that his answer might not be what I think is the correct one, because Pat P was so damn good and he was so fast that it's like hard for him to fathom what it must be like to have, oh, number two corner, number one corner, I don't care, they're all the same to me. Yeah, they are to you. You're Patrick Peterson. You're going to the Hall of Fame. To Benjamin St. Juice, when you get that next year, and I think Will was the one who talked about this, like the burners, and Charles talked about this, the burners, the guys like Jamar Chase who run 4.3, that is something that is way, way different to deal with when you don't also run 4.3 and Juice does not run a 4.3.
Yeah, that's... I didn't really got too much. I think what would help St. Juice in those instances, though, would be the pass rush, where he doesn't have to worry about covering for 3-4 seconds.
And on the stuff against like Flowers, yeah, that was a big deal. These like, look, if a corner ever gives up a crossing route on the other side of the hashes that he started on, that ain't really on him.
Yeah.
That's a communication thing. Somebody should have picked up something over the middle, or it's a pass rush thing that you're sending all out pressure that should have gotten home. And it is never a huge minus to lose on some of the routes that he lost on Flowers. That said, there are other guys who could have made it more difficult or made tackles sooner after. So again, it's not like actually he did a great job. It's just realizing there's something between great and terrible. And if Juice cannot have to spend time on the best of the best because Lattimore's covering them, that is huge. And I think the Mike Williams matchup is actually one that doesn't worry me as much. And to an extent, Pickens, although he's just so good in those 50-50 situations, and Juice is not, that definitely scares me as well. All right, continuing on and never read the comments. Shane from Oxon Hill. Anthony, do you want to play Shane from Oxon Hill's call? Just so in case anyone has not heard it, one, it's always great to play for humor's sake. Two, that way everyone's on the same page. It's become famous and infamous in Hoffman Show circles. Ladies and gentlemen, Shane from Oxon Hill.
The guy had 11 touchdowns over the past 2 years. Terry McLaurin has 9. Ole Miss Zacchaeus had 10 catches last year. Diami Brown had 100 yards last year. Are we a better team without Jahan Dotson? No, we're not. So stop all the baloney, man. We traded Montez Sweat, and now we have Cleveland Furl, who had 2 sacks. And Dante Fowler, who had 2 sacks. We have Austin Eckler, who is 30 years old. Like, come on, bro. Kendall Fuller is in Miami. Curtis Samuel is in Buffalo. Cam Curl is in with the Rams. And we have a guy, Adam Peters, who's bringing in bums. And everybody's like, oh, just because we're bringing in new faces mean we're better.
So we had a little fun with that call on the back of the Lattimore trade this week. You know, when I say a little, we literally shredded it piece by piece. We went player by player, read all the statistics, and we got some fun. We got some fun feedback. Video channel 5183 says Shane was really Ron Rivera through voice AI. That's funny, Anthony.
That's good stuff.
Eric Huffman 98. Shane probably thinks Lattimore is 34 years old, and it was a stupid trade. Tony Robinson 8050. This was funny. It took me a second to realize that there was some sarcasm here, but I did, and I was like, this is good. This is funny. Tony Robinson, 8050. Craig, you let these guys off the hook way too often. When you mentioned Austin Eckler's total yardage, you didn't mention his value in yardage as a kick returner. As Chris Tucker once said in the movie Friday, come on, Craig.
Come on, Craig.
And, you know, stat correction on Dante Fowler from John Garner, 64-18. Speaking of not letting people off the hook, Fowler and a pick six. Because we talked about how he has more sacks than Montez Sweat.
Yeah.
He also has a pick six.
Wow. Shane, I hope you call in.
Yeah. And by the way, this feels a little mean to Jahan. I'm going to apologize to Jahan Dotson. But, because Jahan didn't ask for this. The Dub Network responded to John's comment about how Fowler's got a pick six.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, meaning that he has more TDs than Dotson.
That's low. That's messed up, man.
That's messed up. I didn't do it. I'm just reading it. And then Mr. Bird 09 did ask, wait, has Shane called back? No. We have not heard from Shane from Oxon Hill.
We got to put a bowl out for Shane, man. We got to find this guy. We got to track him down.
Shane! Oh, Shane! What if he called right now?
I'm looking at the phone lines right now. So.
Not getting anything. All right, I promise you, like, one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me to close out, never read the comments. Anthony, are you ready for this one?
I am indeed, Craig.
Chipper Daniels, 4685, who I know is Chipper Daniels. That's his real name. Because we went to high school together.
Oh, wow.
Craig, don't know if you remember me from high school, but I came across your channel like a year ago and was like, holy crap. That's Craig from high school. Small world. Love to hear how much you know ball. But first time commenting and just wanted to speak on the pettiness. This is, of course, after the week of Bears pettiness.
Uh-huh.
I think it's fun here and there, but you were always a genuine dude, and I can see that come out on your show. So just stick with being you, and people will respect that the most with some good old pettiness every now and then. Keep the people wanting more. Good stuff, though, buddy. Keep up the good work.
Dang. I ain't gonna lie. Did you shed a tear?
I got emotional. I was like, this is cool. That's really freaking cool. So Chipper was one of the coolest kids in high school because we were in high school in South Carolina, and he had the same name as Chipper Jones, and it's a bunch of Braves fans. And it was, you know, at that point, it was the 2000s, but off the end of the Braves dynasty. Sorry, Nats fans. You weren't even around yet. Chipper is a great dude, great athlete in high school, like legitimately was a great athlete, but good dude that I genuinely like was friends with in high school. And, you know, you fall out of touch as you go your separate ways in life. And lo and behold, he's watching YouTube one day about football stuff. And there's my face. And Chipper, thanks for commenting. That meant a lot. That was cool.
Yeah, that's dope.
That was really cool. So that's Never Read the Comments. Typically doesn't end on a feel-good story, but it does this week. Appreciate everybody commenting. You can leave yours at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. And we'll do this again 5:30 coming up next Thursday. When we get back here on the Team 980, we dive back into the Commanders-Steelers matchup, and you'll hear from Joe Witt Jr. and Cliff Kingsbury as it's time for our Pick 6 at 6.